You've got a new book out, John, haven't you? Slights and Insights.
Yes, I have. It's been a long, long way coming.
It has. And it's a very eclectic collection, covering close-up, coin, card tricks, through to the great Leon's Haunted Doll's House. Mm-hmm. But I'd say if there was one unifying theme in the book, it's that it's your philosophy, your thoughts on how magic should be developed and performed. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I like all kinds of magic. You know, I started out with sleight of hand, and then gradually I started picking up a simple piece of apparatus and working out, you know, more stage routines and whatnot. And so I don't say I'm a card guy, I'm a coin guy, this kind. You know, I just like all magic. You know, there's things I don't like. I don't like things that are tricky and have really obvious props or anything. But the idea behind the book was, I don't like books of theory where they just sit back with a pipe and they go, well, my theory about magic is this or that. Because it's fun to read, but it really doesn't get you anywhere because you don't have an example to, well, what do you mean by that? Or I think I know. And then they'll go on the internet and say, talk about our art, and they sound like really thoughtful. But they really, it's really, a lot of it is kind of empty, or they don't understand what they're saying. So the idea behind this book, whether people get the idea or not, is to talk about principles and ideas. Now, principles of magic, principles of how to practice, how to create, how to do characters, how to routine things, how to recognize weaknesses and correct the weaknesses and all those sort of things. And I absolutely repeat those throughout the book, different ideas, because I'm trying to drive it home. You hear it once, you're not going to remember it. So I keep driving home. Here's another example of that, what I was talking about. So I'm using these tricks as examples to illustrate principles and ideas. And I'm definitely, the whole time, trying to encourage anyone that's reading it to do these things for themselves. Because you automatically think, you know, if you look at the Beatles or Paul McCartney, you go, well, I couldn't write a song, or I couldn't play the guitar, or this or that. Well, Paul McCartney would say the same thing when he was younger. I didn't know how to do it. I just started doing it. Mm. I just started doing it, and I learn as I go. And I develop things. I kept trying. You know, I write a million songs, and maybe, you know, 500 of them turn out to be great. You know, most people maybe one, but him, you know, the 500 songs. He's an anomaly. But to encourage people and get them to care about their magic, for crying out loud, when people just say it's good enough, that makes me insane. And so many things are easy to correct. Good sleight of hand is not necessarily harder. It means you've thought about it more. You've thought about the details. You've thought about the spaces in between. You've thought about how you get into it, how you get out of it. What trick comes next? You blend things together. How do you cover this? How do you misdirect this? What do I say? Mm-hmm. All these things are important. But when you just go out and you buy a trick and then you show the trick the next day, or you learn the trick and you show it the next day, you're not done. That's just the beginning. Learning the trick, getting off book, that's step one. And then from then on, you just keep trying to improve it. And sometimes I'm still thinking about things that I've done many, 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 many years, and I'm thinking about them again.
Yeah.
And a lot of things just develop over time. So you can't expect to be an instant magician. Even if you're skillful, maybe, and knowledgeable, you still have to think about things. And I do this with all my friends that I think are knowledgeable magicians, David Williamson and Charlie Fry and, you know, all my friends. You know, we're always going, geez, I just can't come up with that last little thing that's going to make this work. Or, you know, how do I misdirect that? Or what do I say for the... All these things are so important. And when you combine them all, that gives you the confidence when you get in front of people, because you're not trying to think of what comes next with the moves or what you're going to say or any of those things. You know, if you care about it, it's the difference between love and lust. It's like just getting an immediate gratification,
right,
or really nurturing a love affair and really caring about something and really doing the work, the work is the whole point.
Yeah. The wand rising from the bottle is an ancient trick and sometimes taught in kids' magic books, but you've covered it in your new book. What made you choose to include it?
Well, it was part of that haunted routine, and it's kind of a new technology for that particular trick, because you take a wand, you put it, they can examine it, you put it in the bottle, it jumps up and rises up and down, it rises up and down, and then it jumps out of the bottle, and you hand them the bottle, you hand them the wand. So that's not like any of the ones from the kids' magic books.
You can't, indeed not.
You can't. I mean, you can't. Not the method anyway. But again, I was looking for a premise. I go, I always like that premise.
Yeah.
And I played with it, but I never really did it. And then I go, geez, that would be great in this routine if at one point I just put that in the bottle, and you know, then it gives the wand some significance. You don't just bring out a stick and start tapping things. It comes to life. It sticks to your hand. That's the other routine in there, is where it sticks to your hand, but not in the conventional ways that people know, or combining methods or whatever. And just looking for cleaner ways to do things, and but simplifying things. And it's actually harder to simplify things than to do things the complicated way. The hacks, the beginners, they don't make as many mistakes as the pros, because the pros are constantly trying to figure out they're trying new things and rejecting things and trying other things. And the hacks and the beginners, they always know the easy way. They never, ever know the simple way. Because simple is not the same as easy. It's not the same as easy. If you say simple is the same as easy, you'll have a trick deck of cards, and you'll do one trick, and then somebody wants to examine it. Well, they can't. Or they want to shuffle it. They can't. You can't do any other tricks with it, because it's game's over, right? And you go, but it's the easy way. Well, if you want to do that correctly, now you're going to have to switch the deck, or you're going to have some other steps in there that are going to complicate things. Whereas if you could do it with a short card. I don't care if it's, doing a pass or anything. The simple, most direct way. Sometimes it's very difficult, and sometimes it's dead easy as far as execution goes. But the thinking is the difficult part. You have to concentrate. You have to focus on things, focus on a problem, and go with the most practical for the most situations.
So how does somebody learn to begin to do, to work out that simple solution? Are there practical steps that people can take?
I don't know if there's any formula for that, but if you start performing a few times and you don't know which pocket that's in, or this flashes when people over here are starting to look, or what, you just take into consideration all those things, and you go, I can't do this way because it's gonna get me in trouble, or they're gonna flash, or it's gonna be, it's not. So you start thinking about how to simplify it. You're trying to get rid of as many variables as possible. If you limit the variables, there's fewer things that can go wrong.
Right.
And that's what I'm looking for. I'm not going to lose the card because I did some obscure card location where I have to learn a formula and three in pharaohs and all that kind of stuff, because you might lose it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I learned from reading Leipzig's book, they said he would never take a chance on things. He wouldn't classic force a card. I bet I could classic force a card probably, I don't do it hardly ever anymore, but I bet I could do it 80% of the time. That's not good enough.
Right.
That's not good enough. If I'm on stage, I have a planned act, or I'm doing a show and I have a planned act and a routine, this leads into this, this leads into this. If I miss that card, that trick stinks, and I've already lost the link to the thing that follows it. So I've got to get that card force. So I use a very surefire force, like a dribble force, which I describe in the book as well. And all my methods are very, very straightforward. They may not be physically easy, but they're very simple.
And surefire.
Yeah, as much as I can get them. Some of them, if it's not Surefire, it's probably not in my act yet.
Right.
But maybe I'm fooling with it, but it's not in my act yet. But I'd say after about 50 performances, it's pretty well set. I'm not going to change too much. And after 100 performances in front of real people, I feel like, okay, this is an established routine now. Yeah. I can entertain people, and it's practical, but it takes that much to figure out all the things that could possibly go wrong.
To figure them out, or for them to go wrong?
At the same time, as you're performing it, you go, well, this could happen, and you make allowances for that, and then other times it happens, and you make allowances for that. So you're thinking about it, and you're experiencing it, and you're making adjustments. You're not just doing things the same way. The definition of insanity is doing things the same way over and over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
You know, if you change your procedure, you're going to change the result.
You talk a lot about creating the theatrical illusion of magic. How do you do that?
Well, that's kind of a... I don't know that I do that absolutely every time, because I'm not like a David Blaine miracle man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a whole group of people like on YouTube and whatever, and they really want people to believe that they're a mystery man and they're like have otherworldly powers, and I don't expect people to, But I don't want any evidence of sleight of hand. I want it to be a mystery. I want it to, tell a little story
that kind of get
hiding skill. I spend half my time acquiring the skill, the other half learning how to cover it up so it doesn't look like sleight of hand. And if somebody says oh boy, your hands are fast, I've lost.
Right.
That's not a win for me, because I want them to go, geez, he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Even though I'm doing a lot of things they don't see, I want them to go, he didn't appear to do anything. It's just, how in the world could you? So now they're thinking trick cards, and they examine the cards. There's nothing. And they think the thread, and they go, there's no thread. And then they get, But sleight of hand should be only one of the things that they consider, not the only. As soon as I start doing this for everything, they go, sleight of hand. Oh, mm-hmm. That's how he did it. He flicked them. I hear people say that, laymen say that all the time. Oh, I know how he did it. He like flicked them, and it went, and it changed. Well, that doesn't explain anything, but
it does
if
to
you
them.
See something, if you see something, if I do a pass, and it's invisible, and you go, why are my hands like that? That's so cozy, and it's so suspicious, and... You don't need to know the details of what's happening. If it looks like a move, that's the secret. They don't need to know where the fingers go and that it's called a pass or anything like that. If you do anything suspicious, that's bad. That's no longer the illusion of magic. And I just try to, it's like making a movie. You don't want the microphone to swing into the thing while they're talking.
Oh, that's a brilliant analogy. Yeah, I've not heard that. And
lose the context or lose the story. All of a sudden, it's not about, you're snapped into reality again. You go, it's a trick.
Yeah.
But if you can engage them in conversation and make it fun, then it's everything flows a little bit better.
It feels not so much a book of tricks, but more a series of lessons. Is that what you intended? Does that sound fair?
Absolutely. I'm glad you see it that way. I hope other people see it that way, because, even if you don't want to learn these tricks, the first chapter in the book is how to read this book. And a lot of people are just going to go right past that to the moves. But the idea behind reading the book is, I don't care if you learn the Leon Haunted Dollhouse. I don't care if you learn the wand and the bottle. I don't care if you learn Ramsey's coins in the hat and my variations on it. Read up to that point where you have to get real technical. And if you don't want to learn it, skip past that and read some more why I did this. why I changed this. What was my motivation for doing this? I'm not trying to be creative for creativity's sake. I'm usually trying to solve a problem. This looks suspicious. I don't have anything to say, or what's the plot, or what's the story behind this. So I try to use those tricks as examples to teach general principles that you could apply to things that you already do. And I would challenge people. I say this in my lectures all the time. I say, take something that you've been doing for years and look at it again and go, what's the problem? And you ask most magicians, what's the problem? They go, problem? No problem. I find the card. People applaud. You know, the ring appears on the end of the ring flight. I let go of it and it appears there. You know, it's like, yeah, but there's always problems, you know, the misdirection or what looks suspicious. If you were in the audience, you know, magicians think they're more observant. They watch another magician, they go, oh, he's hooking the ring on the ring flight there. Yeah, it's, yeah, but I know that because I'm a magician and I'm very knowledgeable. No, everybody's going, what is he doing there? Yeah. Laymen are going, what is he doing there? They don't know exactly what he's doing, but it's suspicious. That's something you have to deal with. So take things that you already do and try to improve them. Look for problems. Look for weaknesses. Excuse me. And, you know, some people can be in magic for 50 years. And they go, I've been doing this trick for 50 years. And it looks like the same day that they learned it. It doesn't look any different. Hasn't improved from the day they learned it. And that is sad because, you know, magic, to me anyway, it's a way of expressing myself and the discovery, discovering ideas and discovering solutions to problems and stories and presentations, all those things. That's what makes it fun to me, not just purchasing things or acquiring secrets. You know, what are you going to do with them? You know, it's like designing things and getting a reaction out of people and say, I had something to do with this. I didn't just buy it. I didn't just know the secret and they didn't know. I designed this whole thing. I worked it all out. That gives me a sense of pride as opposed to I own this book. I own this video. I have this trick, this prop. You know, so it's more fun for me.
Do you think that constant tweaking and improving, because that's something, so I understand, that Ross did and Miller did and Vernon was curious until his last breath. Do you think that's something that your mentors passed on to you, or was that inherent in you from the beginning?
Well, I definitely saw that in their example, but I also see it in the example of musicians that I love and painters that I love. I saw, I think it was a documentary on Picasso, and he was in one of his workshops, and he was just walking around the studio and everything, and he was flipping through some canvases. And right on the front, I recognized one of the paintings, and I go, oh, I've seen that painting before. And he's flipping through, and they're different versions of that painting. So he did this, and he goes, nah, color's wrong. The balance is wrong. And so that's the one that I saw, but all these others were going to be whitewashed over, and he's going to paint something on top of them. So you think, oh, well, Picasso's a genius. He doesn't have to work at it. That's crazy. All the musicians I love, all the writers I love, all the magicians I love, painters, sculptors, movie makers, they try a lot of things. They think through things. And that's the creative part of it, not just acquiring things.
What excites you about magic now? And what concerns you?
What excites me? I'm always looking for new premises. And, and a lot of times I'll look through old books and things just looking for a germ of an idea, not a routine that I'm going to necessarily learn, but I've never thought of doing something with that prop, or that's an interesting patter point that I could apply to something completely different. what concerns me, really, I think consumerism is part of what concerns me, that people think they can buy magic. That makes me insane, because that's what most laymen think. They go, oh, you go to the magic shop, mm-hmm. and you buy the thing,
and then you can do the thing.
You bought it, and I didn't. But if I bought it, I could do it. I bet I could do it. And that makes me insane, because that lowers the status of magic in the minds of the public, because it's just totally easy and accessible. And the violin is very easy to play badly. Anyone can play the violin badly. But the thing about magic is, if you find the card, that people think you're a success, or right. you know, at least the magician thinks he's a success. He finished the trick. He found the card. But, you know, all these other considerations, you know, how smooth is it, or, you know, it's a misdirection, is a good presentation, all these things matter to me. So I guess what irks me is when people, when they don't think about Yeah. when they don't think about their magic. They don't, to a lot of them, it's a revelation that they even should think about it. You know, not even what to think, but that they should think about it. And I'm just saying, it's more fun than paint by number magic.
Yeah.
Or turning a crank and music comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
The more you invest of yourself and your creative thought, you know, yeah, everybody has a different talent. And a different potential, you know, because one guy might not be really commercial, and another guy's super skillful, mm-hmm. and another guy's super creative. I can't be Gayton Bloom, you know. It's like, oh my God, how could I possibly be Gayton Bloom? It's like, where do these ideas come from, you know? But maybe I can do a better pass than uh-huh. Gayton, or maybe I have a different approach to this kind of a trick, or maybe he wouldn't touch that kind of a trick. Yeah. It's not interesting to him, you know? So everybody has some potential, and the tragedy is when people don't explore their potential. They'll never find it, because they never look for it. They just think, they just plug it in, plug and play. Sure. You know, you don't really want that.
You are the envy of many, having had the chance to hang out and learn from Fawcett and Charlie Miller and the Professor. But who are some magicians that you never got the chance to see perform that you would have loved to see perform?
Oh, boy. Well, there, a lot of them going far, far back. Sure. Like, I'd love to see Servé Leroy, uh-huh. The inventor of the Osra illusion, which I think is the best illusion in magic. It's just so simple. But such a strong effect, and Baltier de Colta, mm-hmm. he invented so many things: the vanishing lady in the chair, the multiplying billiard balls, spring flowers, vanishing bird cage, all kinds of things. I mean, you know. But again, he was not like he wasn't reported to be like a great entertainer, you know. But what a creative guy, mm-hmm. and other people picked up his tricks. Alexander Herman and all the guys of the day, were Keller stole his bird cage. It's like he found a relative that had a copy of the cage, and he bought it from him, and then they started reproducing them everywhere, you know. So let's see, who else? I don't know. I never got to see Ramsey. You know, I love Ramsey. I've seen him on film, but you know, the cameras of the day, you had to wind them, and you have 30 seconds. So they're going really fast, trying to get everything in. And if by watching Galloway, I see the really slow approach that I imagine that a Ramsey would actually perform under. But I've been lucky to see a lot of wonderful guys. But there's always somebody you can, you know, there's still people today, young people today, that do a lot of great stuff. And I, you know, I put myself in their place too, because I say, well, you know, if it's not perfect or whatever, I go, hey, it took me a long time to learn this stuff. I wasn't a master of magic when I was a teenager or in my 20s or 30s, and I'm approaching that now just because I'm older. maybe it's an honorary degree. But yeah, I have got a lot more experience, and I have the benefit of of talking to a lot of my friends and getting their opinions and their advice on things. You know, so.
Obviously, apart from your new book, what are some books that you think any serious student of magic should have on their shelves?
You'll be obviously all the Vernon books and you know, maybe you don't need all the Ramsey books. If you get the Ramsey principles, the Ramsey legend, I think, or the Ramsey classics probably has, you know, the foundation mm-hmm. of Ramsey. I love, the Tarbell course is like literally an encyclopedia. I was going to say almost like it is an encyclopedia of like every principle in magic, every effect in magic, all kinds of different props. There's philosophy in there. There's advice. There's all kinds of things. I would never get rid of that because I'm constantly researching things and finding things in there that I forgot were in there or didn't or skipped over. I love Martin Gardner's Encyclopedia mm-hmm. of Impromptu Magic because they're very terse explanations. Hold the coin here, do this, and it will appear as though this happens. And, you know, that's it. And maybe not even an illustration. But you go, wow, what a great gag, or what a great, oh, I can add that to my handkerchief. If I have a trick with a handkerchief, I'll look up handkerchiefs. And there'll be a bunch of gags or a bunch of little quick tricks with handkerchiefs. So that lead into my color-changing handkerchief or my whatever handkerchief, or you know, and then I use the handkerchief with the cards.
Right.
So, you know, building a routine with other elements. What other books? I mean, Tommy Wonder's philosophy is great, the Books of Wonder. I like the classics, Modern Magic and everything. It's really hard to read by today's standards, you know. It doesn't have a lot of illustrations, but you read it for principles and you read it for premises, and I go back through them all the time looking for, oh, what's that thing? I remember something like that, an illustration in there. What was that thing? You're familiar with it, and then you can go back and get more details, but you know it exists, so when you're trying to think of ideas, you have something to go back and refer to and get the more details.
Sure. There are so many questions and concerns that young magicians have as they come into magic nowadays. What's one piece of advice that you'd give to a young magician right now?
Slow down. Pause before and after every effect to allow things to sink in and give people, you know, a chance to react. And don't blend your moves and the presentation together.
What do you mean?
Because this is not a presentation. There's the coin. Now the coin is gone. Now the coin is here. Now they're here. Now here. That sets all moves. All moves. And you're displaying moves. Instead, say, hey, here's a coin. Now the funny thing about this, what? Huh. What I... Oh. Oh. Here it is. Anyway, what I was... I don't know what the, you know. So you're pausing after each effect. It's not a ballet of the hands.
Right.
So one move blends into the next and you keep going. It's about doing some magic and then de-emphasizing the moves down here. But relating to people. It's not all about your hands. And when you practice, I recommend that people spot check in a mirror. Don't practice with a mirror on a table and sit down and stare at your hands for 3 hours, because that gets you used to staring at your hands, which makes other people stare at your hands, but it also doesn't make you consider you have to look up and look them in the eye, and you have to relate to people and talk to people as you're mm-hmm. as you're doing things. You're not just staring into space. You're always talking to people. What do you think of that? And that's good misdirection when you say that and then you do the move and then you do this. But if you're always doing this, It's which hand is it in?
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just a guessing game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a performance. So you have to relate to people. I guess that's what I would say.
We are very, very nearly out of time, Mr. Carney. We end the show always with four quick fire questions. Are you ready? Oh.
Yes, I am. I'll show the book
no,
first.
No, we'll do the book after
the
book that.
Here,
it is
oh,
beautiful.
Okay. Well, it here it is
beautiful.
Again.
It is beautiful. And we will tell people okay. where they can get it
okay.
immediately after your four quick fire questions. Yeah. Are you ready?
And I'll watch for the orders here on the computer. Okay. All right. Oh, there another one just came in. Okay, good. All right.
Favorite pizza topping?
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm. Prosciutto.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Hard to say. Oh, my God.
I know.
So many wonderful movies. Oh,
one.
My God.
One, John. One.
I just saw My Favorite Year again. I watch all my favorite movies many times. My Favorite Year, very funny, heartwarming comedy.
Favorite personal people that make music?
Oh, man. Dylan, Elvis Costello, James Taylor,
one.
Joni Mitchell. Oh, I can't stop. There's no one. There's no one. That's ridiculous. There's no one.
And finally... Who would you rather fight, one massive Andy Gladwin or 100 tiny Joshua Jays?
Oh, my God.
Mm. Hard-hitting
well,
questions,
I have mad nunchuck skills, so I could probably take care of the 100 and humiliate the one.
Okay, good deal. Now, due to your loathing of the commerciality of magic, your book is not available through Murphy's and not available through magic stores. But after listening to this, I'm sure people are going to get it. So how do they do such a thing?
Well, yeah, I've always handled stuff myself because early on I didn't make any money. I always give away the rights to things, and I would never make any money on it. So I do everything through my site carneymagic.com. So here's the book. And this, you know, people are just now getting copies because it took a long time to get them and then send them out. And now, just this week, the deluxe are going out because I had slip covers and everything. But, you know, I spent a lot of time on the design of it. And making those photographs took forever to get to look that crisp. Those were not Polaroids or snapshots. And so I also try in the layout. That's Ramsey's coins in the hat, a new approach to that and a great finish for it. I tried to have, there's tributes to some of the people that I really admire in magic. There's Johnny Thompson and Mike Skinner and people like that. I don't know what I'm saying except buy the book. Yeah, it's
CarneyMagic.
A lot of stuff.
.com. I'll put a link into the show notes and on the blog post accompanying this video.
Great.
John Carney. It's been my honor and an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. All the best.